Comcast was scheduled to meet with Wall Street analysts, and it felt it would have to disclose its interest in Disney then. After numerous discussions of the timing, coming just weeks before the potentially contentious Disney board meeting the first week in March, the Comcast executives had concluded they had to act swiftly. Roberts was still worried about the accuracy of the messages from Mitchell, another of the investment bankers, not Hirsch or the usual intermediary, volunteered to call Mitchell. He stepped out of the room and used his cell phone to call Mitchell, who was in London that evening. Mitchell answered. "We're ready to go tomorrow," the Comcast banker told him, referring to the letter Comcast was going to send the Disney board. "Once you put this out, it will be huge news," he said. "Gigantic." "I understand," Mitchell replied. "We see this as a positive thing. We'll look at it carefully." After the banker reported on the call, Burke said, "Okay, now's the time. Do we go?" "I've got to call Michael," Roberts said. He felt he owed Eisner a personal call, especially since Comcast hoped to characterize the offer as friendly. Because they worried about the quality of a cell phone connection, and Roberts wanted privacy, he stepped out of the room to use a nearby payphone. Dennis Hirsch followed him and waited anxiously outside. Roberts went into the phone booth and dialed Eisner at his office. Eisner happened to be at his desk. In less than 5 minutes, the call was over, and Roberts emerged from the booth, shaking his head. "You're not going to believe this," he said. "Michael said he wasn't interested. He didn't even hear a price. I couldn't get the words out. He's not interested at any price." No one had expected this. Not in the post-Enron era of heightened fiduciary duty to shareholders. At the very least, they thought Eisner would consider selling at some price, but he hadn't given them a chance. As Roberts recounted the conversation, he had asked Eisner, "Are there any conceivable ways you could see putting our two companies together?" "No," Eisner had said firmly. "I like the hand I've been dealt." "Is there any conceivable way you'd sell?" "No," Eisner had said curtly. That's as far as Roberts had gotten in his script. The conversation was over in a matter of minutes. Comcast executives spent the next day huddling with their investment bankers, lawyers, and public relations consultants. On the one hand, Eisner's reaction suggested they'd be in for a fight. There was no suggestion that Eisner wanted to retire or was looking for a graceful exit, as Mitchell had first suggested. But by this point, the group wasn't putting that much emphasis on Mitchell's encouragement. They felt the deal made sense, and when both Disney and Comcast shareholders had a chance to consider this, Disney would have to negotiate. On Wednesday morning, they released a letter from Roberts to Eisner, which had just been delivered to Eisner, who was at Disney World preparing for presentations to Wall Street analysts. "Dear Michael," the letter began, "I am writing to follow our conversation earlier this week, in which I propose that we enter into discussions to merge Disney and Comcast to create a premier entertainment and communications company. It is unfortunate that you are not willing to do so. Given this, the only way to proceed is to make a public proposal directly to you and your board." Roberts proposed a deal in which Disney shareholders would receive 0.78 shares of Comcast for each share of Disney, or a total of about $54 billion.